Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. Today we're going to talk to Dave Arnett, and he has climbed seven of the largest mountains in the world, and there's only a handful of people in the world that have done that. So we want to hear his experiences about that and how his faith has driven him through that and how he has grown in his faith through those experiences. Most recently, he just got back last week from climbing a mountain in South America, and I'm not going to say the name because it's a really long and hard name to say, and I butchered it in the podcast, and so he will pronounce it for you. So enjoy the conversation.
All right, Dave, tell me a little bit about, you just got done climbing, what mountain was it?
Aconcagua. Aconcagua.
Okay.
Which is in Argentina, just kind of between Buenos Aires and Santiago. It is the tallest mountain inside South America. Interestingly, it's the tallest mountain in the overall Americas also. So, but it's one of the overall seven summits as far as tallest summits in each continent.
And you've climbed all those.
Yeah.
How did that start?
You know, honestly, I'm not 100% sure. I grew up in the Midwest, just outside of Ann Arbor. Tallest place is an off-ramp near there, right? So not a lot of climbing going on, little bit of rock climbing. But I always liked heights. I worked on construction during high school. And when I was in my later 20s, I went to an Outward Bound training out in California, a week on ice, a week on rock. And I found I just loved it. I loved, you know, being outside, of course, but excuse me, I really enjoyed the crunch of the ice under your boots, the feeling of being part of a team, the peacefulness, honestly, the contemplativeness, if you will, that comes from being in the mountains was a powerful thing to me. So the year after that, I went to Nepal, had some time on my hands, and did a couple of trekking peaks, 20 and 21,000 Island Peak and Mara Peak, which weren't anything technical, but were a great way to experience altitude and to see truly what I think is one of the most beautiful mountain ranges in the world, the overall Himalayas. And again, it resonated with me. There was a chord there that I hadn't had before, and that led to doing other mountains over time.
Yeah, so you didn't set out initially with that goal, just kind of started to happen.
Absolutely. You know, up until I was almost halfway through the overall seven summits, did I even have that in mind. I'd done other mountains, some of them relatively high. I'd climbed Denali, what some people know as Mount McKinley, back in 2000, I think prior to your birth. And that's a 20,000 foot mountain, but tallest mountain inside North America. Right?
Yeah.
In Alaska. And handful of years after that, my wife and I did Kilimanjaro. And that, you know, I was into a fair number of mountains by then. And honestly, I thought Kilimanjaro was my last climb. Great opportunity to do a climb with Victoria. Great chance to do it as a couple. And then our kids came over and we did with her parents. And we did a safari. And it was a great family trip. I thought that was the end of my climbing time, right? But it was on that climb that our lead guide, who ended up being from Colorado, even though he was working for a climbing company out of New Zealand, approached me one day quietly on the trail, you know, how you get kind of spread out on the trail day by day. He said, you know, Dave, have you ever thought about doing another 8,000 meter mountain, another 25,000 foot type mountain? And I said, you know, no, I'm married, we have children, I had just taken a new role in Intel that was about double my prior role, so life was pretty darn full. And he said, well, think about it, and if you did, I wouldn't climb one of the ones you've done in the past, I would think about Everest and join us on our climb next year on Everest. And honestly, Jordan, I don't think I spoke the rest of the day. It was a hard question, but it was a really good question. He also made me promise that I wouldn't tell Victoria till after our Kilimanjaro summit day. I think for two reasons. One, he didn't want to distract her, and two, he was afraid she might kill him while he slept in his tent. Both of which would have been true, I suspect.
Find a way to push him off.
Yes. Good news is Kilimanjaro's kind of a rounded summit, so there's less risk there. But you know, honestly, after we did talk about it, Vic and I, and after we'd been home and had a chance to think about it and pray about it and talk with our children about it and really do the work, and we really felt led that this was the right thing and it was the right time. So that brought me to Everest, which was a long climb. It was a couple months away in 2007, and was a really much very much a life-changing thing for me. So that got me through three of the overall seven, you will. And I remember when I came back from Everest, having been gone for a couple months, and our kids were 2 feet taller and all the things that come with that, right? People would ask me, you know, are you going to do the rest of this? Sorry, I haven't quite lost my mountain cough yet. But they would ask, are you going to do the rest of the seven? And my answer was, no, I'm going to help raise children, which I did. Mm-hmm. And it seems like is an ongoing process. But over time, I think the mountains reach back out to me. And I probably have the most supportive, encouraging, understanding, wonderful wife in the world. And, you know,
right.
In addition to Michelle, of course. And she's been wonderful. Vic has been truly a partner and a companion and everything good in these climbs. Part of her agreement for me to do them was that she wouldn't have to, so that was a fair
right.
fair deal, I thought. But it's been a gift to be on these journeys.
Yeah, that's good. People always forget when people do climbs like this or do something extraordinary, the people behind the scenes they've left behind.
Absolutely huge.
The support back there.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I appreciated throughout Everest, but afterward, you know, talking to Vic, talking to friends, I didn't realize how much tension it put on her, and it put on our girls who were pretty young at the time, just not knowing, right? There's better communications, there's better comms than there's ever been from the mountain. This climb I was just on, Aconcagua, there was like an audio cybercast almost every day that we were able to have connections. But even then, there's an unknown, right? One of our team ended up having a medical issue that caused him to have to leave from base camp once we got there. He's fine, totally unaltitude related, but because of HIPAA and other things, they couldn't say who it was, right? So, of course, Vic's thoughts immediately are, well, it's probably not Dave, but who knows until you know.
Yeah.
And Aconcagua was a mountain, unlike the rest, that wasn't a first-time summit for me. This was actually my third trip to Argentina for it. First time we got, as our daughter Catherine likes to say, blown off of the mountain, because
yeah.
the high winds and really cold just wasn't possible. We ran out of our climbing window. And then I was there last January, and I hurt my back pretty well, which is much better now. But so it was my third time there. So you're just never sure how it's going to turn out.
Right.
And I think that uncertainty, that unknown, puts a lot of burden on the folks at home, your home team, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then you did two, and then you're gonna do Everest, and then after that, you were like, when they called back, the mountains called back to you. You're like, well, I might as well just do the last four.
Yeah.
And what are the last four?
Yeah. So again, Denali is obviously Alaska, North America.
Mm-hmm.
Everest is Asia. It's in Nepal and Tibet on that border. Kilimanjaro is in Tanzania in Africa. From there, we really kind of sat down between Vic and I and looked at what are the four, what are the most challenging, and tried to do it in order of the most challenging are the ones remaining, right? A lot of people might save Everest to last if they had a plan. I didn't have a plan in this. So there's a mountain called Karstens Pyramid that is in Papua. Think the Papua part of Papua New Guinea. So it's in Indonesia or the continent of Australasia. And if you knew there was a continent of Australasia, you were way ahead of me. But it's this Australia, Indonesia, New Zealand kind of cluster of land masses. Beautiful mountain deep in the jungle. So it's literally a week-long trek in through the jungle, knee-deep mud, seeing tribal people that most people never get to see that used to be cannibalistic not too long ago. So that makes it interesting too. Good news is I don't look real appetizing, so that worked out well. So that was Karstens, and Antarctica is a mountain called Vincent Massif, which is a really interesting journey. Also, more about getting there than the mountain itself. Beautiful mountain, wonderful climb, but you know, getting to Antarctica in terms of flying there, and then the small plane you take to get to base camp, and then you know, wearing a pack and pulling a sled multiple days to get to the mountain, and then climb the mountain is the real challenge there. But it was beautiful and worked out well. And then Elbrus, sorry, is in Russia, kind of in between the Moscow, St. Petersburg, and I think the Caucasus is the name of the mountain range.
And you did that in July, right?
I was just there this past July, which was a really interesting time, at least from my perspective, to go to Russia, given, you know, some of the tensions between U.S. and Russia. And honestly, Jordan, what I found is it was a joy. I mean, if we met a Russian person, our defenses aren't automatically going to go up. We're not going to judge a Russian person by their leadership, pro or con, right? And that's how we were treated. We were treated wonderfully. And it was a great country, a lot of really fun folks of what I saw. We had a chance to see more of Moscow, more of St. Petersburg, and this beautiful mountain Elbrus. And everything worked out great. And then Aconcagua, of course, which is in Argentina.
Yeah.
So those are the seven.
Those are the seven. And how did you hold on to your, how did your faith incorporate into all this? Because you spoke a little bit about how you enjoyed kind of the quietness of the mountains, the awe of it.
Yeah.
How did your faith kind of influence these climbs and this adventure you guys went on?
You know, I think there's, it's a really excellent question. I think there's multiple aspects. For me, that time of peace, that contemplative time, was a really powerful part for me. It's going to sound weird, but when you have a lot of time at night in your tent when you can't sleep in those wee hours, and the tent's not far over your head, and there's nothing to do but think, how often do we get that, right? I mean, in my career in Intel, there were always 23 plates spinning their balls in the air at the same time. I was traveling all the time. There wasn't a lot of brain time to just focus. And the mountains have really brought that to me, whether it's late at night, you know, in a cold, dark tent when you got nothing to do but think, whether you're on a trail and, you know, just following the trail in front of you, or the boots in front of you as you're going up, whether there's pain or not, it's still a time of quiet. It's a time of peace that I think our Western lives don't get an awful lot of. So that's really helped, I think, me to focus on what's important to me. And I have some of my best thoughts. Not that an Arnett brainstorm is more than a gentle mist, but I definitely have some of my best thoughts there. I think, too, is what I've seen and the privilege of being part of actually serving on the mountain, right? When I had read Into Thin Air, the John Krakauer book, or seen mountain movies, or read the press, you often hear about the controversial stuff, the bad stuff. That is not what I saw. I saw absolute heroism multiple times.
Yeah.
And I could give you multiple examples where people are giving up themselves, are giving up their opportunity, are giving up their time, their energy, putting themselves at risk to go first to help others. And I think that opportunity to serve is really important. Two is, you know, honestly, what we do in terms of fellowship in New Hope is a priceless, powerful thing to me. On the mountain, when you're on a rope team and you're tied to two or three other people every day, multiple days, you know, in a row, weeks in a row in some climbs, your life is in their hand, theirs is in yours. There's a bond there. There's a fellowship there. And when somebody has an off day, you're there to help them carry a little bit more of the load. When you have an off day, it goes, you know, both ways, right? So I think that's really powerful. I have a good friend who was climbing Everest last year. We'd been tent mates on a different climb, and she's a doctor. She was on her final summit approach, and came across someone who was in trouble. She gave up her summit, almost gave up her life, to try to help save this person at 28,000 feet. And that's the kind of, you know, self-giving, the kind of service over self-interest that I've seen a lot of and had the privilege of being around so much on the mountain. So it's a real witness to me. It's really helped me think about what's important to me, and I've tried to follow that back in the real world, if you will, Douglas County Search and Rescue, something that's become part of my life in the last year and a half. And it's, you know, a team of volunteers, trained volunteers, who go out in some of the ugliest weather to help people that are in trouble. Yeah. Nobody's getting paid. Nobody's getting pats on the back. It's just doing it.
It's behind the scenes.
Right.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Yeah.
And so definitely service over self-interest was a big thing to me after contemplativeness. I think third is just, you know, for me, it's always been so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day minutia, all the tasks that I have to do, things that I have to do, kind of about me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being in the Himalayas, being around mountains like Denali or Aconcagua, or, you know, they're just, I mean, we live near the Rockies, which are huge, right? Mm-hmm. These are twice as tall, right?
Yeah.
So the breadth of what God has created there, the magnitude and the majesty that comes with that, I think has really helped my faith too, to appreciate there's a much bigger picture, there's a much bigger vision than I necessarily may be attracted to in my day-to-day thinking. So that's been powerful for me too, honestly.
Well, it is amazing sometimes if we take ourselves out of our daily routine, experience something bigger than ourselves, that you start to realize, like, we're in Castle Rock, right? And if you look on Castle Rock on the map of the United States, you're like, well, that's a really small little dot there. And then if you look at Castle Rock when you expand to the whole globe, then it's really small. And then if you expand, like, throughout this universe, it's really, really small.
It is. But it's so easy to get caught up in that day-to-day, what's right in front of you. And Lord knows I'm incredibly susceptible to that. But I think through the travel that I had as part of my work, but definitely mountain climbing. I mean, there's no reason I would have gone to the jungles of Papua or the ice sheets of Antarctica without this kind of a pull. So I'm grateful for that. I've gotten to see cultures and meet people and see creations that I wouldn't have had the privilege to otherwise, and realize there's a lot more than my day-to-day vision sees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that it you saw a lot of good things on your hikes, or your climbs, because when you're talking about movies and books and stuff, most of the movies I see about climbing mountains are terrifying. And I don't like heights either, so those bring an extra terrifying element to me.
But, you know, I mean, there's definitely risk, mm-hmm. right? I remember we were on the way to Camp 3 on Everest, which is on this ice face, Lhotse face. Lhotse's a mountain next to Everest, and it's on this probably 60-degree face that the tent platforms are actually carved into, so you're climbing up this face all day to get there. And we were traversing a little bit, and I crossed my crampons and fell, and I probably dropped maybe 20 feet in a sliding kind of thing. And I was able to self-arrest, and the fixed lines probably would have caught me anyways, but it's definitely a wake-up call. It's definitely a wake-up call. And, you know, a few days later when we were back at base camp before making our final push, and I'm writing my last letter in the just-in-case category to leave in my tent, it's a very sobering thing, right? So that's another aspect that's been really good for me. I mean, the fact that it is serious, the fact that things happen, I think has really helped me focus on what I want my life to be about. And it's not perfect by a long shot, but it's, you know, what do I want my children to think about when they think back on me? What do I want to be known as? And I've had some incredible role models of that for me, and this gives me a chance to really focus on that and help set my priorities when they tend to get off track in the day-to-day hurry.
Right. So it helped you strip some things, you know.
Absolutely.
Which we all should do throughout life at some points, you know. Get rid of some of the cut the fat off of the
absolutely
off of life. Did you have any spiritual experiences on your hikes or your climbs? I keep calling them hikes. I'm sorry. That
I
just
do
sounds
good. No, if you're not on foot, you're not getting there. So, you know, I think the spiritual experience for me has been growth. I mean, God didn't come down from Everest with the Ten Commandments and, you know, bring them to Moses and me. So, you know, it's hard to give an intelligent answer to that. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of spiritual growth, the answer is absolutely yes. I think I've always come back feeling like my picture is a little bigger. My picture of God is a little bigger, a little broader than my narrow, you know, maybe upbringing would have. And that's been truly a privilege. And again, seeing heroism in action, seeing people living what, you know, Jesus taught us to do, which is put others first, right? It's interesting. Roar in the last few days has been talking about Sermon on the Mount and his daily
meditations.
Yeah. And honestly, that's what these kind of actions role model to me, is putting others first, is putting things before yourself, is putting yourself lower than, you know, maybe others might put you, to make the right things happen. So those have all been growth for my spirit, truly.
So this thing that you've been doing, seven mountains, climbing them, something that could be a great achievement that it makes you feel very proud, no doubt, but people can feel very important after that. And what you're saying is this whole experience has actually given you more of a humble approach.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think two or three things have come out of it for me. One is seeing the people that have gone before me. You know, if you look at what Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay did in 1953, climbing, you know, what's probably Everest for the first time to the summit, they didn't know where they were going. Their gear paled in comparison to the tech that's out there now, right? They didn't know what happened 27, 28, 29,000 feet. You know, you read some of the stuff, people thought they may blow up when they get to a certain altitude. And they went into that unknown. I mean, how can I be anything but humble when I'm following footsteps like those, right? I think, again, too, is the gift that I've been given by Victoria, by my children, sorry, and so many folks to enable this happening, to make sure that my family's well while I'm gone, and the support. I mean, when I got home and I unpacked my gear, and I'm sitting with it in our downstairs room getting ready to figure out what to clean and what to put in boxes and stuff, I realized this journey hasn't been about the you know, number of summits. It hasn't been about the accomplishment. It's been about the people that have been there with me in spirit and certainly physically, and the joy in that journey, and realizing just how much of a gift it is to me to have those people around me, truly. And I mean, God has carried me through some pretty challenging things. Aconcagua last year,
yeah,
I hurt my back. I had a herniated disc. I don't recommend it, especially at 19,500 feet.
Yeah.
And it was really, really humbling in that sense. But I'm also grateful that, you know, I was able to fly out by helicopter to be medevaced out at 18,500 feet. I can't imagine what it would have been like having to get down, you know, with that. So those kind of things have definitely been a blessing throughout.
So was the mountain intimidating this time around? Because you said this was the third time.
There was a fair bit of paranoia going on. Yeah. I think every twinge, every ache, you know, you start to question, is it something? Is it something different?
Yeah.
I mean, the odds, I was very spoiled to have Denali be once, you know, Kilimanjaro, Everest, Carstens, all these things be once, right? And I've been on multiple climbs with people where it was their second or third time or more, right? Because it's just, there are no guarantees. You don't conquer a mountain. If you're blessed, you get to, you know, climb it and sit on its shoulder, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, having been there a couple times, there was definitely a certain amount of paranoia with every ache, every twinge, wondering how my acclimatization was going. I'm not the youngest guy on the team anymore, right? I keep thinking I'm in my 20s, and I think I'm wrong about that at this point. So, you know, all those things were present. But I think, in a sense, that was a spiritual journey for me, too, because at some point, I had to just let it go. I had to just realize that you know, however it turned out, whether it was a success measured by the summit or a success measured by getting home, which is more important, God had control of this. And for me, as a type A control freak, letting go, giving up control is a very difficult thing. Even though in my heart, I know I don't have control, my brain keeps thinking that I do. So letting that go, having a trust that I'd done the right prep, that I was with a good team, that the right things were in place, was a really important growth opportunity for me.
Yeah. I didn't notice you're a control freak.
Well, good. Glad to hear that.
I wish I could have controlled those sirens behind us. I think it's always interesting to hear people go through those experiences that have humbled them and given them a different perspective on life and idea of. It's funny when you're climbing those mountains, like you said, you climbed all of them, and then when you got back this weekend, you're looking at where to put the stuff, what to clean and whatnot, and you just started to realize all of this was about people.
Yeah.
And so, and that's something in New Hope that we talk about too, people first, you know, people over theology, and people are what make these experiences important.
Absolutely agree. And I'll give you, I talked about, you know, rope teams, and that's always been a important example to me when I've been on climbs of how important people are. The other one, quite honestly, Sherpa, there's often a misunderstanding of what a Sherpa is. One, it's people that come from a certain region in Nepal.
Yep.
But it's an occupation also. And these are the Nepali high altitude climbing guides. They're not porters, they're not load carriers. They may have begun their career doing that. Nothing wrong with that, but they are best of the best. They're like our professional athletes without the big income or the attitudes, right?
Right. They're usually portrayed as like this old person that's lived on the mountain.
Could very well be, yeah. They're incredibly fit. These are the guys that, you know, when we were crossing ladders in the crevasses in the Khumbu Icefall, you know, you're crossing one step at a time and, you know, da-da-da. And they're just bounding across carrying twice as much load as you are, right? But that strength and that skill makes them really good. In my key learnings in this is what makes them great is the people that they are. Right, they're always looking out for the rest of the team. When there's somebody in trouble, some Western Yahoo like me that's in trouble, they're the people that go first. Even if it's not part of their team, they're the people that put their lives at risk to go help others. And I've seen this multiple times. And they're also, and I don't think it's a coincidence, they're smiling all the time because they're doing what they love, they're in a place that they love, and they're doing things that make a difference. And what a gift it is to have those three things come together and mesh in that model. And to me, volunteering in New Hope, doing things with people in New Hope is a lot like that, right? When I had the privilege of first being the greeter lead, you know, being out in front of the curb and welcoming people, it's one of the best jobs beyond being a pastor in New Hope, right? And, you know, the stuff that we've done to make New Hope more open to people, the stuff that we've done to put a wonderful associate pastor in place, they're all things that involve people and took a lot of work. But when you have people that have passion for it and are focused on doing the right things in the end, I think great things come out of that. So it directly maps back into New Hope, in my opinion.
Awesome. Well, to close it out, at least with the last podcast, what I'm trying to do is just do simple questions, and one of them is, what's your favorite climbing movie?
Oh, goodness. You know, there's a movie called K2 that's terrible acting, but it's wonderful climbing scenes. And I'd have to think of the the actors, but it basically portrays the first American ascent of K2, and it's got some wonderful climbing in it. So it's not, you know, the Sylvester Stallone cliffhanger. It's not John Krakauer's Into Thin Air. It's stuff that does real climbing.
I remember I watched Vertical Limit
Yeah, that has nothing to do with climbing.
Okay. It's, that was the one that terrified me.
It appears to be, yeah. Nobody's jumping off an edge with two ice axes and trying to, they then pick their arms out of the ice and go home. But, yeah, no. It's a fun one, though.
Yeah. You know, there's some movies when you're younger that scare you. I think Vertical Limit scared me about mountain climbing. And Jaws scared me of ever going in the ocean.
Da-da. Yes. That one I get. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm still a little... Yeah, I still don't want to go that deep into the ocean. But yeah.
We are definitely in Colorado, and the mountains here are beautiful. So getting out, even, you know, a walk up single day for 14 is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just be sure you take extra water and a coat, and don't put yourself in a position where we got to show up wearing yellow search and rescue shirts.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Don't be stupid.
There you go. Well, just be
prepared.
Be smart.
Yeah. Well, Dave, do you feel good about this interview?
About this interview, it's a wonderful privilege, and I hope you know, when you vote for top podcast guys, Dave Arnett. Yeah, it's great. I have to say, if I can put in a personal plug, New Hope has been my home, has been our family's home since we moved here in 2000. We've watched our children grow up here. I've had the privilege of being, you know, part of the elder team a number of times. greeting the APNC stuff, the church expansion, different things, and there's no other home for me church-wise than here, and I'm grateful for Russ and for you and all the folks. It is definitely home.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and we're grateful for all of you, and that's part of this podcast, is to get, you know, shine a light on you guys too. And I think there's a lot of people in our church that go to 9 o'clock service or 10:45. So they don't see each other, and then you say, "Hey, do you know Dave Arnett?" And like, maybe, and you know. So, but now they get to hear you.
There you go.
They know you a little more. So.
Well, he's that loud guy out at the curb when you're walking in. So.
All right, Dave. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Jordan.
All right.